So today, let's directly jump into the class. We won't have a bhajan, just to keep up with the time. Om ajnana timirandhasya jnananjana shlakhaya chakshuhu unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupakada mayam dadati svapadantikam vandeham shri guru shri yutapadakamalam shri gurum vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Hare Thank you very much for giving me a chance to serve you by coming for the Bhakti Shastri. Today we will go over the Isopanishad verses from 13 to 18. We had, for all the sessions we read, we had an overview class. But for the 13th to 18th verse, we did not have the overview class. Though we completed the study, we will just do the overview before we go to the next part of our Bhakti Shastri course. So till now we completed 12 verses, and let's turn to the page 91 on the Isopanishad book, which is the 13th verse. Anyad evahu sambhavad anyad ahura sambhavad iti srishrumadhiranam yenastad vichachakshire. Translation. It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and that another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. So in this verse, in the purport, as if for those who have already completed the reading, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes on two points, which is that worship of the demigods and worship of the supreme is not one and the same. And then he also explains dhira. All this is heard from an undisturbed authority. Because unless one hears from a dhira, then one's knowledge is not perfect. And who is a dhira? The homework question was, how can one become a dhira? And a dhira himself is the one who has heard from an undisturbed authority. So the knowledge comes in a disciplic succession, and that perfect knowledge helps one to overcome this illusion or doubt that, oh, that's all right, you worship this God, you worship that God, ultimately we all reach to the same path. And Prabhupada uses the example in the purport, saying that, the famous example, if you buy a ticket to Bombay, you won't go to Calcutta. So this is the sum and substance of the verse 13th. I'm assuming since by today we should have completed all these verses, and my understanding is that I'm explaining to the choir, because you all are already experts. I was hoping you would teach me, but I'm still continuing with this. Did all of you get through all the verses, or okay? That's yeah. Whenever, if you can complete it and then submit the homework, because the verses were more, the homework is light. There were not too many questions, just to balance out the study. And just to give you an example, in the next semester it's going to be a little bit more involved. Srila Prabhupada, he gave small portions to start with, and he's going to whet our appetite more and give us more and more portions of his transcendental nectar to fulfill us. So any doubts on 13th? I think we'll go through all the verses quickly and then come back for any questions and answers. Mantra 14, on page 101, sambhutim cha vinasham cha yastad vedo bhayam saha vinashena mrityum tirtva sambhutyam ritam ashnate. One should know perfectly the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna and his transcendental name, form, qualities and pastimes, as well as the temporary material creation with its temporary demigods, men and animals. When one knows these, he surpasses death and the ephemeral cosmic manifestation with it. And in the eternal kingdom of God, he enjoys his eternal life full of bliss and knowledge. Again, in this verse, what Srila Prabhupada talks about, he gives about the material creations and the spiritual creations of the Lord. And he compares and contrasts the material and spiritual creations, how material creations are temporary and they are being manifested and unmanifest, but spiritual nature remains as it is. So one question one might ask is, why do I need to know both? I mean, I am not a product of material nature. I am an eternal spirit soul, that I understand. But why should I know about material nature? Why should I know about God and how he creates? Why do I care? Because of the simple fact that Krishna and his creation are not different, material creation. Both, Prabhupada says in the earlier verses, just like if you see fire, the heat and the light both are inseparable components of fire. And without it, the fire is not complete. The Lord is whole in himself, but his material nature and spiritual nature is, both are his natures. And when, especially in devotional service, in this form of bhakti yoga, there is nothing like, oh, this is matter, we just reject it. And this is spirit, we accept it. Because Rupa Goswami also gives the famous verse that those who have this materially minded intelligence and who reject any items or materials which are related to Lord Hari, then their renunciation is incomplete. So the creation is as much as part of God, the material creation, as is spiritual creation. Though they are different, they are still emanating from the same Lord. So one cannot simply say, no, I don't care about material energy. No, that is form of God. And the process of devotional service teaches us how to convert something material into spiritual by the process of devotional service. So one cannot blindly reject. That is Mayavad philosophy, which says, Jagan Mithya. This is all false, illusion, I don't care, no. God is wonderful, he can create, then we need to know about the creation. Otherwise, why would Bhagavatam, which is a spotless Puran, include the creation as creation and sub-creation as one of the components, two components? Why does Sukadeva Goswami delve so much of time trying to explain how Lord creates? So this is, the understanding is needed. And when we read Nectar of Devotion, we get more and more glimpses into how matter is being converted into spirit when it is put in the fire of devotional service. So this is kind of the gist of the 14th verse. Let's go on to the 15th verse, the famous verse. Hiranmayena, that's on page 109. Hiranmayena patrena satyasya pihitam mukham tattvam pushana pavrano satyadharmaya drishyate. Translation: O my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself to the pure devotee. So Srila Prabhupada's purport dwells on length on what is Brahman and how Brahman is nothing but the glaring effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and how Brahman realization is not the complete realization. And here the devotee, he prays to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, O my Lord, please remove this. I can't see your face, which is covered by such dazzling effulgence. And Krishna himself says the same thing in Bhagavad Gita in the 11th chapter. Arjuna, you want to see my universal form? Sorry, you can't see with your material eyes. Let me grant you the vision first, and then you can actually see my material. This is my universal form. Now, if universal form to be seen by an ordinary human being requires special vision, what is to be said of the beautiful Shamsundar form of the Lord? How much of more purity we need? So in this in this verse, Prabhupada emphasizes on what is Brahman and how to actually obtain that vision of the Lord. A very, very important and an implicit point in this verse is that Lord is a person. If Lord was just Brahman effulgence, there was no need of the devotee to say, show me my face. This is the effulgence, this is the light I see, that's good. And what is there to see anything else? No, here he says, no, please show me your face. So the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, as we go more into Bhakti Shastri, this is a very key concept. It's simultaneously easy and difficult to understand. That how Krishna, the supreme absolute truth, the complete whole, the unlimited opulences, and yet he is just like a person like us. How is it possible? And it is not that when Krishna comes as a person, all his energies are scattered and he's just a person. No, complete in himself, yet he is a person. And when Krishna is there as a person, simultaneously his creation is manifest throughout. Everything is working wonderfully under his control. This is an important Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy concept, and we get more into it. We get more and more deeper into it, because unless this foundation is understood, we cannot enter into the Rasa Shastra. That how can we have relationship with Brahman effulgence? Well, Brahman effulgence is great, but it does not completely reciprocate our feelings as a friend or as a lover. But Krishna as a person does that, and when Krishna does that, it is not that he's taken on a human being to reciprocate with our feelings. No, the devotee has that innate feelings of reciprocation towards Krishna, and Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, reciprocates in his position. How wonderful this is. A jiva reciprocating sometimes on an equal or on a superior level to God, and Krishna as a person reciprocating it. This is the ultimate attainment of devotional service. Is to be established on that mellow of devotional service. In whatever capacity one is, we'll go deeper. When we read Nectar of Devotion, then we can get more and more deeper on how these things happen. This is just a whetting of our desire to actually know more and more. What is this? How does it happen? Is God just acting when he tries to reciprocate? Or he just assumes a form, a human form, just to reciprocate with us? Or how does it work? What is the secret? This is the great mystery and science of devotional service. And in this verse, this hint of Krishna or the Absolute Truth being a person is revealed. Because Vedas, they don't directly tell you about Krishna. And Ishopanishad being part of the Yajurveda, you don't get directly mention of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But there are clues about his personality, about what he is. Veda ischa sarve rahameva vedyo. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that if you know me by the study of Vedas, then your study of Veda is successful. Otherwise, one just can, again, when we go into Bhagavad Gita, one can become a Veda vadarata. We have read it in the previously also, that they just read Vedas for following the rituals, but their ultimate aim is sense gratification. And we are using Vedic rituals to satisfy my own senses. Hey, material world, this is like, work so hard, this is not very beautiful women, not many, as I see nice beautiful women in movies, but in real life it doesn't work. Let me go to heavenly planets. Much better women, much better wine. You know, if I drink there and drive, nobody's going to give me a DUI ticket. This is very happy. So let me go to the heavenly planets. The much quality is much better. I don't get diseased. I don't have to apply deodorant on my armpit so that my sweat stinks. No, everything is nice. So that is Veda Vadarata. Do Vedas, go to heavenly planets. But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, sure, do it. You'll go to heavenly planets, but your karma is, once it's exhausted, you'll come back again here. Not nice. Again coming back to the same thing. Thank you. So the whole Ishopanishad says, get out of this. Don't try to be happy in this material world. It's not possible. Hiranyakashipu tried it. He was the best as far as the efforts goes and as far as the results go. He did the most severe possible austerities. He got the best of the results. Complete proprietorship over three worlds. Death. He made sure that he covered all the loopholes. Death by this, death by that. No, sir, I'm great. He was killed one way or other. That's the nature of this material world. Nobody can be happy, right? But, so where Isha Upanishad said, no, just try to approach Krishna and you'll be eternally happy. So this mantra 15 gives a glimpse. Slowly, Isha Upanishad opens up saying that, oh, God is a person. And so with that thought, let's move on to the next verse, which is the 16th verse. Page 117. Pushan ekarshya yama surya prajapatya vyuha rashvin samuha tejo yatte rupam kalyanatam tatte pashyami yosavaso purushah soamasmi. Translation. O my Lord, O primeval philosopher, maintainer of the universe, O regulating principle, destination of the pure devotees, well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind, please remove the effulgence of your transcendental rays so that I can see your form of bliss. You are the eternal personality, you are the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, like unto sun as am I. In this, there is a theme which is going from the previous verse, but here there is something more added to it. We get a little bit more glimpse. So Prabhupada says, please remove the effulgence of your transcendental rays so that I can see the form of your bliss, Ananda. The Lord is Satchidananda Vigraha, and this verse gives that Ananda. Because Krishna is Purna. He is complete with Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchit Ananda. Three. Sat, eternal, Chit, happiness. Sorry. Sat is eternity, Chit is knowledge, and Ananda is bliss. So Krishna is complete in all these three. And the realization of the Absolute Truth as a person gives all these three. There is Paramatma realization, there is Brahman realization, and there is Bhagavan. So the Bhagavan realization, everywhere, Isopanishad, even the Vedas, though they may seem little roundabout, but ultimately when studied under an expert spiritual master or a scholar like Vaisheshika Prabhu, we'll come to understand that Krishna is a person. So that is the sum and substance of the 16th verse. We get a little bit more. We get a little bit more glimpse, and here, if you see page 119, just for those who want to go into 119, the last paragraph, Srila Prabhupada writes 119 and in the 16th. In his Bhagavad Sandarbha, Srila Goswami states, the complete conception of the Absolute Truth is realized in the personality of Godhead because he is almighty and possesses full of transcendental potencies. The full potency of Absolute Truth is not realized on the Brahma Jyoti. Therefore, Brahman realization is only partial realization of the personality of Godhead. O learned sages, the first syllable of the word Bhagavan, Bha, has two meanings. The first is one who fully maintains, and the second is guardian. The second syllable Ga means guide, leader or creator. The syllable Van indicates that every being lives in him, and that he also lives in every being. In other words, the transcendental sound Bhagavan represents infinite knowledge, potency, energy, opulence, strength, and influence, all without a tinge of material inebriety. So, Srila Prabhupada also quotes Jiva Goswami and Bhakti Sandarbha and Bhagavat Sandarbha here. All purports are exquisitely beautiful, and they just very nicely, Srila Prabhupada explains, leaving no doubt about what exactly the verse means. Because honestly, when we read his Upanishad, at least I was, initially when I read for the first time, I scratched my hair. I was like banging my head against a wall saying, if you just read the verse, you will be completely baffled. If you worship the demigods, you go into nations. If you worship the truth, the Absolute Truth, you still go into more nations. I was like, what? I didn't get this. We worship to demigods, you go into nations. So if I worship Absolute Truth, still more nations? I didn't get this. And then Prabhupada explains very clearly in the purport what is meant by this verse. So every purport is exquisite, and it's not we are done with this Upanishad. This is our lifetime reading, and every time we read, we get newer, deeper, and richer meaning of these beautiful verses of Ishopanishad. That is the beauty of spiritual topics, is that one is never satiated reading or satisfied reading once. You know, you read more, the thirst increases and you get more and more desire to read. So this is mantra 16, more and more into the personal conception of the Lord. And then the last two verses is where the relationship between the devotee and the Lord happens. In these verses, let's go to mantra 17, conveniently on page 123. Vayuranilam amritam atedam vasmantam shariram om kratosmara kritam smara kratosmara kritam smara. Let this body be burnt to ashes and let the air of life be merged with totality of air. Now, O my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. And Srila Prabhupada in the purport, he dwells on length on what is the material body and how material body is very temporary. And that body which common mass of people take tremendous amount of care to maintain, decorate, preserve all through their life, which is anyway going to deteriorate, Srila Prabhupada says that it, in the purport, it's going to go away. It's just a matter of time. No matter how well you try to preserve it, no matter how well you try to decorate it, no matter how well you do everything to possibly save your body, it alas, it's not to be saved. And then the other important point Prabhupada mentions in the purport is that it's good that you remind Krishna, telling that what all sacrifices you have done. But Prabhupada specifically emphasizes that even if you don't, Krishna won't forget. Neha vikrama nashosti pratyavayona vidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. That even if you do a little, Krishna says it is going to save you from the greatest fear. What does this mean? Means Krishna is remembering. Otherwise, how will he save us from greatest fear? So we don't have to explicitly tell Krishna, Prabhupada says in the purport, because Krishna always remembers. Our whole goal is at the time of death and whatever possible time we are living, as much as possible, to continuously remember and chant and think about Krishna. And because at the time of death, all we need is to just remember Krishna. And Krishna has been our witness, our friend. He's been there since time immemorial. He isn't deputed any demigod to be the observer. He hasn't deputed any supernatural being. He himself as Paramatma has been there in our heart, unchanged, undiminished, undeteriorated, ever since time immemorial, never left us. Even when we were in a pig's body, he was still there. Even in an ant's body, he was still there. As an animal, we are like, it's a very, very fearful situation. You get up in the morning, you don't know when are you going to live. Because an insect, I just saw that there was an insect in the flower, and then an insect was like playing nicely, frolicking, enjoying. And all of a sudden, this lizard came out of nowhere and took the insect, and insect was gone within a flash of a second. So while the Discovery Channel may portray as animal world as beautiful and you know everything is so nice, calm, internally there is a hard struggle for existence that goes on. And every animal has a tremendous amount of fear for its life. Why? Ahastani sahastanam apadani chatupadam phalgani tatram atyam jivo jivasi jivanam. Narada Muni says in the first canto that those who don't have hands, they are being devoured by those who have hands. And those who don't have legs, they are being devoured by those who have legs. Similarly, the weak, they are being devoured by the strong. This is the way of existence in the material world. So, this material world is a not nice place. And Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was there since time immemorial, witnessing your actions, seeing your good, seeing your bad, and everything in between. And he awards it accordingly. So this verse, Prabhupada says, just try to remember Krishna at the time of death and you will be successful. Okay, that's pretty much the sum and substance. And 18, page 133. Agne naya supataraya esman vishwani deva vayunani vidvan yudasmat juhuranameno bhuishtam te nama uktim vidhema. O my Lord, as powerful as fire, O omnipotent one, now I offer you all my obeisances, falling on the ground at your feet. O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you. And since you know all that I have done in the past, please free me from the reactions to my past sins, so that there will be no hindrance to my progress. This is the last verse of Ishopanishad, and the last two verses are very heartfelt prayer by the devotees. This verse also says that I have no shelter. I have no way to destroy my sinful activities except by surrendering unto you. So, please help me to destroy all these sins. And Krishna also echoes the same sentiment in the Bhagavad Gita, that in his famous 1866 verse, that if you surrender unto me, I'll protect you from all sinful reactions. It's the same thing. The Vedas and the Gita, or the Vedas or the Upanishad, this is the Ishopanishad is part of Vedas, and Upanishads is the cream of Upanishads is Gita Upanishads, which we'll be reading in depth next semester. They all reveal the word of God, which is that one can never be free from sin by one's own effort, no matter how hard you try. I was in India for a month, and when I came back, there was a flood of ants in my garage. There was like ants everywhere. And now, how much can I protect myself against trampling against those ants? Even in spite of my extreme care, I was tiptoeing around the ants, making sure, like taking a broom, sweeping the ants away. But the ants were in floods. And what was the guarantee that when I was taking my car out of the garage, not a single ant will be crushed? I was just praying to Krishna, please protect me. I may be killing an ant here. I don't know what to do. I just leave it up to you. So there is no way one's own effort can save from sinful activity. It's impossible. One can use one's own intelligence. Please don't try this at home. To protect oneself from sinful activities, it's impossible. This, the nature of this material world is such that one is bound. And in fact, it is said that even if you just make nice offering for just you eat, to eat, you have to eat to survive, and to eat you have to cook. And when you cook, you kill so many things. So how are you going to be free of sin? Impossible. So the only shelter is somehow, Krishna, I surrender unto you. Now you take care of my sinful activities. I don't know what to do. And this nature of surrender, Krishna makes sure that all his sinful activities, either externally or internally, because the sins can happen both the ways. And then we will read in the Nectar of Devotion next time how one commits sin and what is the cycle of sin and how by performing devotional service this complete cycle is crushed. Because in Nectar of Instruction we had a glimpse into it, wherein Maharaj Parikshit, Sukhdev Goswami said, okay, you commit sinful activities, perform atonement, it will level out. Did a bad activity, do an atonement, it will level it out. But Maharaj Parikshit said, I don't know, that's kind of dicey to me. Because what's the point? You commit sinful activities, you go do atonement, then come back, and you still have the tendency to commit sinful activities. You commit it again, and back and forth. And then Sukhdev Goswami was, of course, he knew the answer, he was just testing his disciple. He said, you're right, by doing this, this is useless. Practically trying to commit sin and doing atonement. Instead, developing our Krishna consciousness, then our complete sinful desires, seeds, everything from seed to our prarabdha karma, everything in between is completely destroyed. So we'll read in Nectar of Devotion when we read on this vicious cycle of sin. There's a because these by knowing this and by reading Prabhupada's books, then we get the intelligence to get more and more surrender. We realize what's the point. And why do I indulge in blind Vedic rituals and sacrifices just to contract my sins? Might as well engage in devotional service. Gradually, it will be completely destroyed. So, those are the 18 verses. And I humbly request you that you complete it. We completed Nectar of Instruction. Congratulations. That's a wonderful achievement. That's the whole idea, that you know, in having an association like this and reading little by little, we will be able to understand and read and complete Srila Prabhupada's books. But a word of caution, again, we may, it's a spiral thing. We keep on reading the same things to get better and better ideas, to go more deeper and deeper into subject matter. So this is the Isa Upanishad. Questions, comments, suggestions, criticisms? Yes, Sukeshwari Mataji. Mic.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Mataji.
Prabhuji, I have a question from Nectar of Instruction, actually. I was just reading the text 10, but I'm actually trying to look for the exact line, but I'm not able to find it. But it was about, after many births and deaths, he who is actually knowledge, who is a knowledge, surrenders unto me. Krishna is explaining that, you know, people go over, you know, they start in from a lower level and then reach the exalted position. And he had mentioned in one line, I'm actually not exactly getting where I read it. It was in one of the purports.
Text 10?
Yes, Prabhuji. But he says that, you know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead actually, it's basically like this. Says that if a person is, you know, trying to do devotional service and follow the four regulator principles, and then achieves what he has, what they have to achieve, once they are in that exalted transcendental position, they do not have to follow the four regulator principles. So I did not understand that. Like, I know they are in a such a high. Does it mean that they are in such a highly elevated position that? It's like when you're doing a PhD, you don't think about ABCs. So does it page number 77, Prabhuji? Thank you. Page 77, when he says, when one has developed such attachment, he can spontaneously serve the lotus feet of Krishna even without following the regulator principles. This stage is called Raga Bhakti or devotional service and spontaneous love.
So you're saying is
I didn't understand that line, Prabhuji. Like, why wouldn't a person need to follow the regulative principles then?
Let's see Shloka book. There is one verse. It's page 375 on Shloka book, Mataji. The last 375. So the verse from Padma Purana says, "Smartavya satatam Vishnur vismartavyo na jatuchit sarve vidhi nishedasyur." Krishna is the origin of Lord Vishnu. He should always be remembered and never forgotten at any time. All the rules and prohibitions mentioned in the Shastras should be the servant of these two principles. This is a very profound verse and at the same time a little confusing. Because here it says that all the rules, all the regulations, all the Shastras, all the Agama Puranas, you name all the canonical literature that ever existed is completely subservient to those to these two things, that never forget Krishna and always remember Krishna. So from this verse we understand that these regulations are helping us to remember Krishna. When we have some regulations, you always think of Krishna. We chant 16 rounds. So what are we doing there? We are just trying to control our other activities, trying to discipline ourselves, our mind which is jumping into 20 different places, and our whole being saying that, you know, you have so many other things to do. So you are trying to control this urge and sit at one place and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. So the whole act of chanting is to actually remember Krishna. And Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita, the best way to remember Krishna, wherever Krishna says, remember me, and Prabhupada says, the best way to remember Krishna is to chant his holy names. So, when we do that act of chanting, we are trying to remember Krishna. Right? And then we have to follow some rules and regulations, so that our chanting will advance. Now, when we keep on advancing, there will come a stage where you will be remembering Krishna, which is the goal of all the scriptures, automatically. It's not you have to get up in the morning, take your bead bag, force yourself to chant, or force yourself to go to temple. It's spontaneous and it's automatic. So at that time, it may seem that the devotee is breaking some rules. I can give few examples in this regard. Vallabha, he came to meet Sri Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri. And then Mahaprabhu told about many of his companions. And he specifically told of Ramananda Rai. At that time, Srila Ramananda Rai, he was personally preparing some young girls for performing a dance for the Lord. And he was personally massaging their bodies, personally was doing everything. And then Vallabha was shocked. What is this? He's an exalted associate of Mahaprabhu. Here he is doing something very abominable. How can anybody do this? And then he went and he complained to him. He didn't complain. He said to Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu, I have met Ramananda Rai, but he was doing this. And Mahaprabhu said, because he's Ramananda Rai, he can do that. You don't do this. So this is, the whole idea is that, of course, we cannot try it, and those are very advanced devotees. But the point is, it may seem or it may be apparent to our mundane reasoning that he is breaking some regulative principles. But they are so absorbed in love of Krishna that it doesn't matter. And Mahaprabhu himself personally certified to that. So this is one example of how, we are talking on a very advanced level. In the Raganuga Bhakti, again we go into the devotional nectar of devotion, we get into more of these details. What is Vaidhi Bhakti and or Sadhana Bhakti? What is Ragatmika Bhakti? What is Raganuga Bhakti? And so these are all the details. But having said that, the other example is Goswamis, the Acharyas. They were completely absorbed in the mellow of love of Godhead. Yet they were strictly following the regulative principles just to teach to the world. So the gist is that when you advance to a certain extent, it doesn't matter. Oh, other thing before that I go. So for a person who is advancing or in sadhana bhakti, if you break regulative principles, if you commit sinful activities, what happens? Why are we asked not to commit sinful activities? Because somebody is having some power over us and can control our lives and say, you can't do this. No, the devotee knows that if I commit sinful activities, then I'll fall 3 steps down in the devotional path instead of going up. And I'll be going further away from Krishna. So there is those regulations or don'ts just to help us protect our devotional service and to move upward. But when you have reached a stage where you are completely absorbed in mellow of love of Krishna, then these rules and regulations, they don't act on you. Even if it is something against the scriptures from a mundane sense, it can never deteriorate your relationship with Krishna. Other case in point is a famous example of gopis. They were completely acting so-called immorally against the material world, from the perspective of material world. Yet, Mahaprabhu says, this is the perfect way to serve Krishna. So we'll get more into it, Mataji. These are like, this is the gist, but we can get more into the technical details, analysis of Raganuga, Ragatmika, and how it goes, what is the progression, what are the symptoms, and when should one do. So there are so many things to that. Does that answer one? Thank you. Vaisheshi Prabhuji, do you have anything to add to this very important question?
Well, after that beautiful explanation, it would be presumptuous of me. I'll just say one thing, and that is that when it says the regulative principles, it doesn't mean like the 4 regulative principles. Mm-hmm. Generally, like Srivas Prabhu was pointing out, there are standards in Vedic life, as he alluded to, that devotees are not, like taking bath. There's another verse that I thought you were going to turn to, but I was amazed when you brought this one. It was even more perfect. When Madhavendra Puri says, my bath 3 times a day, I bid you goodbye, and all these kinds of things.
Nice.
In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's an example of how Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya came to see Mahaprabhu before he came to see...
Right.
No, who was it? He came to see Mahaprabhu before he came to see the deities. Which is, the regulation is you'd go to see the deities, then you'd come see Mahaprabhu, and he said, why did you come see me first?
Right.
And he said, the legs are the chariot, the heart is the driver, so I came here first. And they drove me here. And, from mundane vision, you say, Someone even asked, why aren't they fasting and doing these other things, taking bath first before they go see Mahaprabhu? But out of spontaneous love, it was explained by Gopinath Acharya that they're coming to see Mahaprabhu. But, you know, anyway, your explanation was so satisfying that now I feel like I'm muddying it up, but
you're just clarifying. Thank you, Prabhuji. Yes, Rakshit Prabhuji.
Just for discussion, I wonder whether some verses that are there in the 12th chapter where Krishna goes through gradation of the significance of devotional service, whether they also, to a certain degree, addressed where regulative principles fall on the scale as compared to fixing one's mind on Krishna and worshipping him. And I was just looking over them for the sake of discussion. Just would like to point out in the 12th chapter, and these are verses that actually start from 12:1, 12:2, and in the Shloka book on page 124, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is saying that those who fix their minds on my personal form and are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be most perfect. Then he again repeats this in subsequent verses. And in 12:9, he points out, Mighty Arjuna, O winner of wealth. So he repeats that in 12:6 and 7. He says, But those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me and being devoted to me without deviation, engage in devotional service and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Pirtha, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. And then he goes to 12:9 and then makes this distinction where he says, My dear Arjun, O winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain to me. Now, I wonder if in these verses this thing is implicit, that fixing one's mind on Krishna and worshipping him without deviation is the highest form of service. But that if one is not able to do that, then the next line is to follow the regulated principles of bhakti yoga, that being mainly to develop a desire to attain to him. But those who are fixing their minds and doing it without deviation have already attained the desire and are at that state.
Right. Thank you. That's a very nice point. Yes. Yes, yes, please.
I just want to discuss if I'm right or this is a story from Ramayana, like when Ram goes in search of Sita, then he finds his devotee named Shabri, and Shabri tastes the berry before offering to Ram to make sure that she doesn't offer any stale berries. So does that mean that it's out of law she does it? That's why. Otherwise, the rule is that before serving prasadam to Lord, we cannot taste it. But she's breaking that rule and she's doing it out of devotional service or out of law. Does that go with this?
I don't have a definitive answer, so I would look up to Vaisheshika Prabhu. The question is, Shabri broke the regulative principle of actually offering a bhoga instead of tasting the bhoga and then offering to the Lord, and the Lord accepted it. Does that indicate of spontaneous love?
Well, it indicates spiritual intelligence.
Okay.
Because, as you brought out this perfect verse, ultimately, we're meant to remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. All the other rules and regulations are servants of that. You know, the spiritual master says, don't go in that lake. And then one day the spiritual master's not there and you walk by and somebody's drowning. And then he said, don't go in.
Right.
A devotee, a disciple, has to be spiritually intelligent. Mm-hmm. And in executing the rules and regulations of deity worship, really the basic principles. The Shastra really deals with basic principles of how to serve Krishna. One, and those were brought out by Nisringa Kavacha Prabhu when he was here, saying that first and foremost, Krishna is a person. Remember that he's a person. He's not a statue. He's actually there. If you think of that when you put jewelry on, when you offer things, when you do, then you remember that how, you know, a person is there. Also cleanliness and punctuality, things like that. All the other things are details. And if the details get in the way of the principle, then there's a kind of, you know, a violation of the principle. And so it's not to the exact point, you know, of this spontaneous devotional service, what you're bringing up, but it's related. It's related because ultimately what we're trying to do in devotional service is please Krishna. Mm-hmm. And if the motive is correct, you know, and the devotion is there, then Krishna accepts it. But we also have to be very careful. That's why we have checks and balances, sadhu, shastra, guru. And we can't speculate and say, well, you know, we should be careful when we do that, not to stray too far without taking help of sadhu, shastra, guru when we do it, thinking that, oh, now I'm spontaneous. Because this also happens. Mm-hmm. Devotees start thinking like, well, maybe this means me now. I really don't have to follow the rules and regulations anymore. And therefore, you know, we heard from Srivas Prabhu, and he was teaching from the Nectar of Instruction about Niyamagraha, about rules and regulations. You have to follow them, but you can't also follow them ritualistically. You have to know why you're following them, which means, you know. Yeah, exactly. So it's a science, right, like that.
Thank you, Prabhu. And the last point I want to add to that is Krishna accepting, instead of the banana fruit, the banana peel from Vidura. He was so absorbed in the love, because one of the senior leaders of ISKCON, he made this point that Krishna accepts your love, your feeling, bhavagrahi. He's accepting the emotions which you are giving through that material, not the material itself. And so, as Vaisheshika Prabhu kindly pointed out, if we are on that level, then maybe Krishna will accept playfully. But till that level, one has to be careful about not committing offenses and follow the rules and regulations.
I just have one last question, Prabhu. Sorry. I just wanted to know that, like how Prabhu was just mentioning about that we know Krishna is actually accepting the spontaneous love. Sometimes I feel that I know that Krishna is accepting the spontaneous love, but sometimes I think my mind tells me that, like, for example, in the morning when I'm getting ready to go to work or drop Srivats at school, I prepare all the boga, and then I usually try my best to cool down the milk and then pour it into the cups for the deities to drink. So, but there are days when I'm really in a hurry, and then I put tulsi on my big pot with full of milk and then offer in my mind. So when I'm doing that, I know Krishna is a person, but just thinking that, oh, it's okay, Krishna just sees my heart. He doesn't really see whether I'm cooling it down and giving it to him in cups, whether it's okay to do that. Because sometimes I think my mind would say that, oh, it's okay, you know, that's so easy because you don't have to, you know, pour it, cool it down, and then keep it there and then wait for them to drink. Now, this is so spontaneous and fast. I put tulsi, I put some sugar, just offer it in my mind. It doesn't even go directly on the altar because I'm in such a hurry to go. So I wanted to know that whether it's really okay that way, because I know that I'm nowhere near spontaneous love, but I just want to know that, you know, sometimes, you know, when I hear all this, my mind would start telling me it's okay to do this because Krishna is only seeing your heart. So how do we do it, Prabhu?
Well, it shouldn't be a daily routine. If it's in an extreme emergency and you don't have no resource, and then you beg the Lord for forgiveness and then do it in the mind, but your mind shouldn't get accustomed, oh, yesterday you did it. Well, the Lord, this is the same Lord yesterday. Today also is the same Lord. What's the point? You know, let's just offer it in the mind and then... Ideally, one should... And unless it's an emergency, one should try to do the best you can. And I understand your situation, but better you do it that way. But that doesn't mean Krishna is cold-hearted and cruel, and if you offer in the mind, he's going to, like, give you some terrible misfortune or something like that. He can understand. He's a person, and he's the most kind and gentle and compassionate. And he knows your heart. He knows your innermost thoughts. He knows your desires. He knows your intentions. So, there is, in effect, it's best to do it the way it's according to the rules and regulations. In case you can't, at least the second best thing is to offer. If not nothing else, not completely. So, see, again, the rules, attachment to the rules and regulations comes. As Vaisheshi Prabhu says, there is some intelligence. In your case, one way to do it is, the rule is, you have to take milk, you have to boil it 3 times, you have to cool it down, you have to wash the plate nicely, clean it, and then offer it to the Lord. Man, I don't have time. So, okay, forget Lord, I'll come tomorrow. That is just, you see that just attachment to that regulation is giving you that fear, oh, Lord won't accept if I don't do the exact procedure. So one uses one's spiritual intelligence and then just begs Krishna, saying that, you know, please forgive me, today I am in an emergency, please accept this, and from tomorrow I'll make sure I'll make time for you. So that's okay once in a while.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Anything else you have to add? We will really like press the fast forward button 3 times, that bar, because we are running out of time, and we all are here to listen to Vaisheshika Prabhu speak. So the second part of our session was the overview of Bhagavad Gita. That's the nice part is that we can do it in a few minutes. So ideally we were supposed to complete this Upanishad today, but my humble request is that you try to complete it as soon as you can, submit the notes. And then the next semester was Bhagavad Gita. And to prepare for that, we were just doing an overview of Bhagavad Gita. Now, the overview was that just as we do chad every day, instead of doing a same chapter, we are just taking first chapter, going through the whole chapter, and going through the translation. So, what's the use of this? One thing is you can complete your chat for the day. The second advantage is that when you go through the chapters on a high level, we can see what is actually the flow of Bhagavad Gita. At least a little bit. We can get a feel for it. Oh, the first chapter is this, second chapter is this, third chapter is this, fourth chapter is this. So when we go next time, because we are going to read Bhagavad Gita for next 1.5 years, that is 3 semesters. And when we go deep into the verse or a chapter, then sometimes we lose track of, oh, what's the big picture? And why is Krishna saying this here rather than saying it there? So just to get acclimatized to the feel of Bhagavad Gita, we are doing an overview, which is we just go through the Sanskrit, go through the translation. No word to word, no purport, no serious taking down of notes. Oh, and please don't worry, nothing will be asked of you from Bhagavad Gita for the final exam for the first semester. It is just going to be for our own preparation. Now, there are a few ways of doing it. Yes, Mataji. Just to re-emphasize, the final exam will be only from Nectar of Instruction and Isa Upanishad. Next semester, it's going to be a little more exciting. We'll keep it always better service, always more excitement, is Bhakti Shastri motto. So next semester, what we are going to do is, in the first semester, you had homework and you had to submit the homework. But really, the homework didn't count into your total marks, which we are getting, and that was entirely based on the final exam. In the second semester, what we are going to do is that the homework also will carry certain amount of marks. And if you don't submit the homeworks, you will lose the marks. And a little bit more excitement to that, if the homework is not submitted within the deadline, then you will lose some marks, 1 or 2 marks, and or 1 or 2 points, or whatever you want to call it. And if you submit it within time, you get those two points are guaranteed, and everything else, whatever the homework is, we can deal with it later. I know it's adding more excitement and more little bit of, you know, anxiety for Krishna, but that is for Krishna to read Bhagavad Gita, and trust me, in the end you will be happy that initially you had to take the stress and do the work, but at the end you didn't have a whole pile of work to complete and whole chapters to catch up with. It's not a fun situation because you won't really understand, you won't actually grasp. You'll just read through the chapters, and once you read the purport, well, what was the gist of purport? not sure. So that shouldn't be the situation. That's the whole idea. Because it'll add work all around, and it'll including me, because I have to keep track of how many points the devotees scored on the part of their homeworks and how much will be the final tally. So it's work all around, but good for everybody. I won't be in anxiety having sleepless nights. Oh, this devotee didn't submit homework. What should I do? That devotee didn't submit. So is that okay? A little bit more excitement? Initially, you will curse me. That's okay. That's fine. I'm your servant. You can curse me whatever way you want. So the overview of Bhagavad Gita, there is one way. There are two or three ways of doing overview. One thing is you read through the words in translation, and whatever comes from your heart or whatever impression that chapter has made, you can summarize it in one, two lines. Just for your own, you don't have to submit it as a homework. Just write it down. Oh, first chapter, Arjuna did not fight. Or he said, I would not fight. That can be a perfect explanation of the first chapter. One line, two line summary. Whatever made impression on you. There is a deliberate reason I am not providing the notes for the overview. Because you and the Supreme Personality of Godhead's words are all interfacing. And what impression they make on it, you can just note down. For those who think that it's too much work, then also we have in the Bhagavad Gita, in the table of contents, you have an overview itself right there. We can go through, which is what we are going to do. Hari Guru Prabhu is laughing. Maybe he thinks this is the best option. Well, doesn't matter. Either way, you will get acclimatized with overview. That's the whole idea. So we'll go through that overview in a minute. You can just note down the same overview and just write it down or note it down. At least you'll have a faint idea of how the chapter flows through. So we will be doing chapter 1 through 9 in next 2 weeks for those who have completed. But please, Isopanishad and Nectar of Instruction are the first priorities. And those who haven't done it, please catch up as soon as you can and submit the homework. And I will be very, very, very grateful and thankful that when you submit the homework. I have responded to all the homeworks which have been submitted to me as far as I know, and if anybody did not get a response from me, please do write me back and I'll see if I missed the email which you sent. But I think I'm pretty much up to date on responding. Yes, for next 2 weeks, Mataji. Yeah, 9 to 18 in the... So before we start, I'll just offer a few prayers to Gita and then we'll start. Valine mochanam pumsam jalasnanam dine dine sakrut gita mritasnanam samsaram alanashanam sarvopanishado gavo dogda gopalanandana partho vatsastudhir bhokta Tugdam Gitam Hridam Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Ekam Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantrasya Nama Eko Mantrasya Tasya Namaniyani Karma Pi Ekam Tasya Devasya Seva. We have the copies of Bhagavad Gita. So we have contents. This overview is this much. And, you know, actually I wanted to read a whole chapter, but I don't think we have time right now, so we'll just go through this. So chapter 1, observing the armies on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. As the opposing armies stand poised for the battle, Arjuna, the mighty warrior, sees his intimate friend, relatives, teachers and friends in both the armies ready to come to fight and sacrifice their lives. Overcome by grief and pity, Arjuna fails in strength, his mind becomes bewildered and he gives up his determination to fight. So the first chapter, we have two sections from verse 1 through verse 27. It's setting the scene of how the battlefield is described. Please sit up, Prabhuji. You have to request. Okay, sorry. So the verse 1 through 27 describes the scene. What is the scene of Bhagavad Gita, the setting. And then from 28 through 42 gives Krishna Arjuna's explanations of why I will not fight. Trust me, it's a very emotional chapter. Here is Arjuna, the most beloved devotee of the Lord. He's arrayed against his enemy, against his enemies, who are his very close relatives. Relatives with whom he had childhood memories. Relatives with whom he received paternal, maternal and grandfatherly affection. And here he was about to kill them and destroy them. Very, very trying. Very, very emotional. But the beauty of the first chapter is, in spite of all this being extremely emotional, Arjuna's arguments are not emotional. They are strictly based on shastras, strictly based on logic and clear clear intelligence. So that's the beauty of the first chapter. The second chapter, contents of Gita summarized. Arjuna submits to Lord Krishna as his disciple And Krishna begins his teachings to Arjuna by explaining the fundamental distinction between temporary material body and the eternal spirit soul. The Lord explains the process of migration, the nature of selfless service to the Supreme, and the characteristics of a self-realized person. Chapter 3. Karma Yoga. Everyone must engage in some sort of activity in the material world. But actions can either bind to this world or liberate one from it. By acting for the pleasure of Supreme without selfish motives, one can be liberated from the law of karma, action and reaction, and attain transcendental knowledge of self and the Supreme. Chapter 4. Transcendental knowledge, the spiritual knowledge of the soul, of God, and of their relationship, is both purifying and liberating. Such knowledge is the fruit of selfless devotional action, karma yoga. The Lord explains the remote history of the Gita, the purpose and significance of his periodic descents to the material world, and the necessity of approaching a guru, a realized teacher. Chapter 5. Karma yoga, action in Krishna consciousness. Outwardly performing all actions, but inwardly renouncing their fruits, the wise man, purified by the fire of transcendental knowledge, attains peace, detachment, forbearance, spiritual vision, and bliss. Chapter 6. Dhyana Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga, a mechanical meditative practice, controls the mind and the senses and focuses the concentration on the Paramatma, the Super Soul, the form of the Lord situated in the heart. This practice culminates in Samadhi, full consciousness of the Supreme. Chapter 7. Knowledge of the Absolute. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Truth, the supreme cause and sustaining force of everything, both material and spiritual. Advanced souls surrender unto him in devotion, whereas impious souls divert their minds to other objects of worship. Chapter 8. Attaining the Supreme. By remembering Lord Krishna in devotion throughout one's life, and especially at the time of death, one can attain to his supreme abode beyond the material knowledge. Chapter 9. The most confidential knowledge. Lord Krishna is the supreme Godhead and the supreme object of worship. The soul is eternally related to him through the transcendental devotional service, bhakti. By reviving one's pure devotion, one returns to Krishna in spiritual realm. So that is, in a nutshell, these 9 chapters. And then we just go through it to get a feel for this, for what it is. And later we can also add to the linking of the chapters. There is one book. Now, we are going to read only this Bhagavad Gita, and that's our focus, that's our target, that's our goal, Prabhupada's words. But usually there is also this book called Surrender Unto Me. This is, if for those who are interested, they can get a copy. It's more of a reference. It's more of something which you can use to get a little bit clarification, or Burijan Prabhu highlights a little bit more of the verses. But this is not mandatory reading. This is not needed for you to buy. It's only out of your own interest for more reference. There are more commentaries of Bhagavad Gita by different acharyas in our sampradaya, but we are not going to, that they are beyond the scope of Bhakti Shastri, at least for now. So that's the goal, is somehow we sit at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, try to understand his words, try to understand his purports, try to understand his mind on why he was writing these. We understand his devotion, we grasp his devotion in when we read Bhagavad Gita as it is. So that is itself the best thing. But there are many other books we can go into, but not for the Bhakti Shastri. 2 quick announcements before we conclude is that the second semester, the enrollment is due, and it's by December 15th. You just have to either meet me personally and say, hey, I want to be enrolled, or you can just send me an email saying I want to get enrolled. It's just because when Vaishish Prabhu and myself, we designed this, the semester was self-contained unit, meaning to say that anybody could join in any semester. And so it requires that we kind of have a registration for every semester. And it will also give you a chance to evaluate, you know, where you are with the course and what can be done. Having said that, just before the final exam, I'm sorry, that is going to happen. It's better I tell you right now. The only time we can get the feedback from you esteemed devotees is just before the final exam. I'll give you a feedback form which kind of tells, like, what did you like the course, what's the room for improvement, what do you need to see, so that we can get the feedback and incorporate. And that is a questionnaire which you need to fill it out as a part of your final exam. Of course, those minutes which you use, I won't count it towards your final exam. Don't worry. And the second announcement is that I sent a mail that because the devotees are going out on marathon and they are completely focused on distribution, and we have a huge goal this time around, we decided that December 20th might might be right in the middle of the book Marathon, and devotees have to study and have to divert their attention. So since we are just going on this big goal, we said we'll move the final exam from December 20th to first week of January, where, you know, we are done with the marathon, and then we can just completely focus on the final exam and preparation. Is that okay? Does anybody say, December 20th, why did you change? Anybody? Yes, Ramananda Sakaprabhu.
I have just, you know, 3 points, Prabhuji. The first one is regarding the study for the next 2 weeks. This is a overview of chapters 1 to 9. But what is it that we actually have to study? The translations of all these verses?
Okay.
Or what is it that we have to study? Are the purports also?
So the whole idea is that it's the first meeting with Bhagavad Gita. We study the Sanskrit, if you want to, and then the English translation, for sure. So, just like we do Chad, where we study Sanskrit and English translation, pretty much that's what you do. And when you do it with attention. I mean, okay, this verse says this. And just, it's a flow. Okay, what did Krishna say in this chapter? Or what happened in this chapter? It's just like getting a feel for it. Oh, okay. This is Arjuna asked this question, Krishna replied to this. Or Krishna talked about this particular subject in this chapter. So we get a feel for this. And then that's the whole thing. There's no like detailed analysis. There is no word to word. Or there is no like why Prabhupada said this, or why is this, or what is the intricacies. That we'll go into the next semester. Just get a feel. Okay, second question? Yes, sorry.
The other 2 points are, one is, can we get some sample questions of the final exam so that we get a feel of what kind of questions we can expect? Because that kind of conditions us what we have to really study, because or how deep we have to go.
The depth to which you will go are there in the homework. Whatever is the homework questions, pretty much those are the level you will be. And honestly, if you ask me sample questions, I will definitely give you homework questions, sample questions. Because the Bhakti Shastri, we are not going in depth. We are not going like very, very deep into a verse, or give different analysis, give different angles, and give counter-arguments, and then how does this work? No, we are not. It just is like, what is the philosophy? What is Prabhupada trying to tell us? Or what is he trying to teach us? What are the fundamentals of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy? Those are the simple, basic. And trust me, I want each and every one of the Bhakti Shastri students to score at least 100%. So that's the goal. This goal is not to like twist the whole thing out of context or something like that and make it as miserable as final exam. No.
The third point is, as you mentioned, right now the book distribution marathon is going on, and it will go on till the end of December. So rather than having the exam in the first week of Jan, can we do it in the second week, if that is okay?
No, because, problem.
Because yes. Then at least we have 1 week to focus on the Bhakti Vriksha study.
Okay, no problem. We can do it. It's the first week, but we can always schedule it. So the only thing is then we have to probably in the next class, because we are really running over time. Probably in the next class, we'll talk the logistics of second semester. You know, what can we inculcate and how can we do it? There are a few ways of doing it, and then we'll bring it up next semester. Sure, we can do it in Jan second week. It's not a problem. I haven't nailed it down to the exact minute, but I'm looking at like two and a half hours max.
An exam held in class?
Yes, it'll be like I'll get the question papers here, and devotees will take their seats here, and in the middle unit, and somebody might help out. Yes. I can do the open book also if you want to, but the answers won't be in the book. I'll make it as less convoluted as I can. Yeah, essay questions will be more. Mataji, the hint. Okay, let me give you some hint. It's more of, we are saying, for example, what are the three type of miseries? Name the Sanskrit and English. We need to be very, very familiar with that's all the Bhakti Shastri is about. We need to have a firm grasp of the basics. And if we, what are the four defects? These are two questions. So sample questions. What are the four defects of a conditioned soul? These are basic questions which one should be able to have a firm grasp on. Then we'll know for sure if some book come into the market, some Bhagavad Gita or a commentary on Bhagavad Gita comes into the market. with your knowledge of Bhakti Shastri, can you identify whether it's a bogus, whether it is valid, or whether it is a useless or a useful commentary? That's to help discern these sort of things. Somebody comes, oh, I found a wonderful article on this aspect or Bhagavad Gita aspect. You'll be able to discern, to say, oh, no, this is all bogus, sorry, it's useless. That's kind of thing. That's the whole goal of Bhakti. Yes, Prabhuji, anything else? I think we have just 1 minute. It's still half an hour over time, but 1 minute. No. The final exam will be only from Nectar of Instruction and Discipline. For your reading, you can go to your own interest. My humble request is that you write 1-2 lines. After reading the chapter, just pause for 2 minutes. What was the chapter about? Just whatever comes from your mind. You can just write it down, and later when we actually go in depth, you can go back to see whether what you were thinking was the right angle, or was it a different angle, or you thought of something else. We need to clarify. So it is highly beneficial for our own self to write at least 1-2 lines on what the chapter was about. No, because there is no question of correcting it. But it will be very useful later when you write down notes and go into the flow. Please forgive me, Vaisheshi Prabhu. I went way over time, and I'll try to keep it under time from next time on. Hare Krishna.